Order.
There are these things called facts.
Order.
Are there any questions without notice?
Yes, one more week until a new speaker hits the chair and has her voice, as it will be, ripped off to make an opener for the Question Time quiz on RN, where we ask all the questions that no one else is asking about the week's news for very good reason. And joining us in the house for Question Time this week, we have Chris Berg, a research fellow at the Institute of Public Affairs, and I think it's fair to say the leading defender of unions in the Institute of Public Affairs. Chris,
look,
welcome.
Any time I have an opportunity to defend my very close comrades at the union movement, I will take it.
Fantastic. Graham Morris, political strategist with Barton Deakin and a former advisor to Prime Minister Howard. G'day, Graham. Thanks for joining us.
G'day, Julian.
Excellent. How are you in the union movement going?
The union movement and I are strangers.
Fair enough, too. Psychiatrist and journalist Tanvir Ahmed, thanks very much for joining us, Tanvir.
Pleasure, Julian. I have nothing to do with unions.
Yeah, fair enough, too. Fair
Except
enough.
Except the AMA, perhaps.
Maybe. And, of course, it's the quiz tonight, so, you know, we're expecting answers that come from somewhere else, so you'll be fine. Okay, the quiz, of course, is genuinely pointless. There are no prizes in this quiz. It's open for everyone. The quiz, of course, is for news junkies across the nation. If you want to play via Twitter, the handle is at RN Drive. You can text us on 0418 226 576 if you need to personally defame me. My handle is at Jules Morrow. But let's get started.
And without delay, away they go.
Order.
Round one.
Order.
Yes, it's the race that stops the nation, and it starts the quiz this week, of course. Tuesday was Melbourne Cup Day. Did anyone have a win, just out of interest? Anyone come out of profit on Melbourne Cup Day this week?
Mine died.
You died, right?
Okay. You got euthanized at the end of the trip.
That's funny, because I put money on that.
Yeah, yeah, well, there you go. Graham, did you have a flutter?
No, I'm a bit the same. My horses, if they'd have started at lunchtime on Cup Day, would still have lost.
Well, let's hear some of the highlights from the Melbourne Cup earlier this week, of course.
While Gay Waterhouse celebrated her first Melbourne Cup, a tragic subplot cast a shadow over Flemington as one of the pre-race favourites, Verima, fractured a front leg and had to be euthanised behind a curtain on track. Yeah, the lack of coverage of the incident drawing backlash on social media.
Yeah, fairly grim aspect of the Melbourne Cup this week. And I just want to assure all our guests on Question Time that the same principles do not apply for underperforming thoroughbreds on the Question Time quiz. You'll be fine, don't worry. But Chris Berg, this question's for you. Now, poor old Tom Waterhouse wasn't allowed to have a bet on the Melbourne Cup. Well, I think he probably wasn't allowed to have a bet anyway, given his profession. But there was some controversy about whether he could put a bet down on Fiorente. There was one lucky gentleman who did put some money on the winner, and it was paid out. Who is this?
Gail Waterhouse never won a Melbourne Cup, and I see her every year at the cricket, so she's a great trainer.
Any thoughts on who had a lucky flutter this week at the Melbourne Cup?
No, I don't, actually.
All right.
Was that John Singleton putting on a voice?
No. Maybe. It could well have
been. Some reason my first thought was Paul Howes, and I go, like, that'd be kind of weird.
Well, yeah. No, well, it actually comes from across the ditch. Let's hear it again.
Gail Waterhouse never won a Melbourne Cup, and I see her every year at the cricket, so she's a great trainer.
Anyone else know who that might be? Actually, a high office holder in New Zealand.
There's only six or seven people in New Zealand.
That's right.
Can't be too far
and
away.
One of them's the Prime Minister. That was New Zealand Prime Minister John Key.
Wow.
Yeah, who did well this week. Okay, Graham Morris. Now, your question is, who's this speaking at a Melbourne Cup of yesteryear? And if you can really be specific, which yesteryear was it?
Ladies and gentlemen, any little noises that you may happen to hear are only static. It's just something wrong with the system.
It's a slightly different vibe at the Melbourne Club. Melbourne Cup. Graham Morris, any thoughts on who that was?
Yes, John Kerr.
Yes, yeah, didn't really cover himself in glory, did he?
Presumably about 75, and he was three parts shot to the wind. Can I tell you, Junior? It was a funny old Melbourne Cup. You know, for anyone who didn't know, you would think that a horse named Gay Waterhouse had won it. You know, by Tommy Smith out of Smith, and it was the publicity was just fantastic. And I presume the horse was named after that bloke that we see on television all the time. It was just quite extraordinary.
Did you manage to get down there, Graham?
No, I didn't, but I went to my... Listen to this. I went to my local TAB and put some money on for my daughters and myself and my wife. And this bloke, as I walked in, the bloke walked out, and he said something to me, and I didn't catch it. My hearing's not much good. And I said, "Sorry, mate, what'd you say?" And he mumbled again, and I said, "Sorry, I didn't catch it." He said, "Mate, this is a Labor TAB."
There you go. Well, all right.
I thought he was giving you a tip or something. Mate. They're going to shoot that horse, you know.
Well, no wonder you didn't come in a winner there, Graham. All right. Of course, you were right. The grab that we heard, and we might actually replay it just for old time's sake. The grab, of course, was Sir John Kerr at the 1977 Melbourne Cup.
Ladies and gentlemen, any little noises that you may happen to hear are only static. It's just something wrong with the system.
And as it happens, we are joined on the line now by the former CEO of the Victorian Racing Club, Rod Johnson, who was there in the enclosure with Sir John Kerr back in 1977. Good evening, Rod.
Good evening, Joe.
It sounds like it was a pretty tense mood there when Sir John was out in 77. Have you seen anything like it before or since?
Well, it was quite an event in more ways than one. I always say when people ask me about Sir John, I think that to say that he was a fool or drunk was, you know, unkind to him. I thought he did a terrific job in the circumstances.
But is it not the case that he and the Premier of Victoria at the time, Henry Bolte, might have had a couple before they came on to speak?
Well, Sir Henry was a member of the VRC committee at the time, and he was given the task of looking after Sir John for the day, and he did it very well.
Rod Johnson, I think you should have been a diplomat for representing Australia overseas. Has there ever been a moment where there's been that sort of, I suppose, politicising of the Melbourne Cup?
Well, I can't recall that, really. It's usually been pretty free from political aspects, but that's certainly at that time, Sir John, like, he copped plenty.
Yeah. And, how intense did it get? Was it just booing, or was it even kind of, you know, more intense than that?
Oh, there was a little bit of booing. It wasn't that intense.
But anything thrown?
Sir John turned it back to the hecklers. I mean, he gave as good as he got.
Fair enough. Well, Rod Johnson, thank you so much for joining us on the Question Time quiz there. Rod Johnson, former CEO of the Victorian Racing Club, and he was in the enclosure when Sir John Kerr was copping a bit back in 1977. Now, I don't want to reflect on anyone's age, but I do want to ask one of our guests, Tanvir Ahmed, were you there in 1977 when...
I was still in Bangladesh, I'm afraid.
Right.
Just to put a multicultural dimension on the Melbourne Cup,
yeah.
The only time I've actually won the Melbourne Cup, I usually pick from a good name or something.
Yes, yeah.
But the South Asian community was in raptures about a decade ago when Rogan Josh was the winner.
Yes, absolutely.
That was a real triumph for the community, that one.
Did they like the name, or did they have money on it as well?
Yeah, I think a lot of people had a flutter just solely because of the name.
Fantastic. All right, okay. Well, Tanvir, this one's for you. Which Australian Prime Minister's entry in the Dictionary of Biography includes this observation? Quote, "He was a student of racing form, but hardly ever betted, apart from an annual £1 on the Melbourne Cup." One Australian Prime Minister who apparently was into the GGs, certainly more than Gough Whitlam was, but apparently only ever bet once a year at the Melbourne Cup and only for a pound.
Okay, well, I guess the pound itself.
That's a bit of a clue,
historical.
As a man who was probably, he had to restrain himself from many vices, and it seems like betting was one of them. Any thoughts on who that might be?
I'm trying to think. Well, I wouldn't say my Prime Ministerial history is great, but in terms of, given you brought up restraint, I'm thinking of the most drunken Prime Ministers.
I think you're on a good tack there, and I suppose that doesn't necessarily narrow it down too much, does it? But it was. Does anyone else have a thought on who that might be?
I'm putting a random stab on John Gorton.
You got the first bit right. It's a John.
John. Oh,
but
very
not
good.
A, but
yeah,
not
very
not a Gorton.
Yes.
During wartime.
Presumably it's Curtin.
Curtin. Graham Morris, absolutely correct. Yes, I was interested that that was kind of part of his official biography in the Dictionary of Biography.
It was probably so abnormal at that time of history.
Yeah, exactly. And I used that, if I'm sure, Radio National...
Because he did do other things.
Yeah, like, he did. Yeah.
He's famous for more than that.
Well, this is true. This is true. Yeah, you wouldn't think it'd get into the kind of one paragraph that you might put in the Dictionary of Biography. But I'm sure Radio National listeners know about Trove, the fantastic online database of the National Library. And I did actually do a little bit of troving about John Curtin. And there's a 28th of May 1942 story from the West Australian newspaper where the Prime Minister was forced to give a statement, apparently, saying that Prime Minister Curtin was not concerned whether the Cup was run on a Tuesday or a Saturday. And he actually remembered times when the Melbourne Cup hadn't been held on a Tuesday, because I always thought it was the first Tuesday in November, but apparently there were times when the ground was flooded and it was held on different days as well. So there you go, more information than you ever thought to ask about the Melbourne Cup and former political leaders. Graham, I was actually looking into this. I don't think there's ever been, apart from Sir John Kerr, I don't think there have been other controversies or kind of colourful moments involving the Melbourne Cup and politicians. Are there any that spring to your mind, or that you can spill the beans on for the very first time here on Question Time?
No, I think you're right. I think the Cup has been very clean at politics. It's fantastic. Look, there are several times there where prime ministers have been asked to present the Cup, or at times have said, look, I don't think it's appropriate because it's a bit close to an election, or I don't want to get booed.
Yeah, right. Fair enough.
Everybody hates me so much.
Yeah,
I'm not sure.
Yeah, because I suppose it must be, from a PR perspective, it's a great opportunity to get to have the eyes of the nation on you, but at the same time does run the risk of being a little bit partisan, I suppose.
And it's a little like a prime minister, you know, getting welcomed at the football. You know that at least half of the crowd are going to give you a boo.
Right. And these days, of course, they'd be asking who paid for the taxi fare there and all those things as well. It's Question Time on Friday Drive. Julian Morrow with you. In the house this week, we have Tanvir Ahmed, journalist and psychiatrist, Chris Berg from the Institute of Public Affairs Union Defence Division, and Graham Morris, Federal Director of Barton Deakin Government Relations. And on Friday Drive, it's 20 minutes past 7.
Happy birthday to you. Happy birthday to you.
Order!
Round 2.
Order!
It may have passed people by this week, but as well as the race that stopped the nation, there was a little anniversary, an important moment, and that was... Did anyone pick whose voice that was singing Happy Birthday? Not a man known for his singing. I mean, that's not part of the question, by the way. It was just a bit of audio that I found online. I'll play it for you again. Have a listen to this.
Craig Emerson again.
Happy birthday to you.
It's not Craig Emerson, thankfully.
Happy birthday to you.
But you're on the right track. Here's the second half of it.
Happy birthday, dear Wayne. Happy birthday to you.
It's Kevin Rudd.
It's Kevin Rudd, and that's actually the first time I've ever heard Kevin Rudd say something nice about Wayne Swan. Yeah, he's not known for his singing voice, but of course, it wasn't Kevin Rudd's birthday this week. It wasn't Wayne Swan's birthday this week. Chris Berg, I'll give this to you. Do you know whose birthday it was on Monday?
It was Tony Abbott's.
It was, born on the 4th of November 1957. Did you send him a card, Chris?
No. But of course I celebrated in private, as most Australians would have.
Indeed, probably. Exactly, in a dignified moment.
we still had a cake.
I wonder if that's what he meant when he said he was too busy to speak to the media.
Yeah,
exactly. Exactly. He's going door-to-door celebrating.
Well, I mean, and there wasn't much...
Why the media never picks this stuff up?
Exactly. I mean, are birthdays a PR, a spin challenge for prime ministers as well, Graham Morris?
They can be. Yeah, particularly if you're, going to an old people's home or a school or somebody, and they bring out a cake. It's just ready made picture for the TV.
Yes.
Yeah, it's nice.
Yeah, exactly. Of course, Prime Minister Gillard, when she was in office, turned 50, and there was a lot of news reportage at the time. I think she was given a cavoodle? Some sort of weird crossbreed hypoallergenic dog. But that's not what we're talking about now. We're going to talk about other people who share Prime Minister Abbott's birthday. Just the 4th of November, not the 1957 part. Tanvir Ahmed, I'll give this to you. There are plenty of high-profile people who were born on the 4th of November. Have a listen to this grab and see if you can tell us who it is.
One of the biggest things I get is that young people, they feel like things aren't getting better. All this talk, all these speeches, all these conventions, all these parties, it all sounds good, but it's not affecting me.
Now, I'll give you a clue. It's not a current member of the Australian Parliament.
I think probably one of the most modest people in the world.
Yeah, true. Now. Well, and you're on the right track. I'll give you a multiple choice on this.
Okay.
Is it A, Barack Obama, B, Sean John Combs, a.k.a. Puff Daddy or P. Diddy, or is it Denzel Washington, C, Denzel Washington? Which one do you think it is?
I guess a man who's changed his name, a bit like Prince. So yes. P. Diddy. Oh,
I was so hoping you'd say Barack Obama.
And no. A bit of trivia on P. Diddy. He was a milkman for 3 years.
Really?
From the age of 13 to the age of 16.
That is, you know, I did a very small sliver of research.
And he didn't like milkmanship?
No. That's when he learned his first entrepreneurial.
There you go. Yeah, well, he certainly does have an entrepreneurial bent. And I did a little bit of research, but they tend to say rapper, record producer, actor, entrepreneur, but never milkman, which is a shame. My favourite thing about...
Considering he still does. It
yeah, exactly. Yeah, exactly. Yeah, I know. You've got to have something to fall back
on. It's still
on.
A big part of my life.
That's right. Yeah. My other favourite go on.
His career went backwards.
Yeah, absolutely. Are you a P. Diddy fan, Graham? I'll take that as a no.
I can't stand rap.
All right. Well, the Chicago mayor back in 2006 named the 13th of October Diddy Day. In honour of P. Diddy, Sean Combs' charity work. I don't know why he chose the 13th of October. I would have thought the 4th of November would be the one to go for. But well done, team. Even on Radio National, we've managed to get a lot of chat about P. Diddy in here. So we'll go now to you, Graham Morris. Not everyone was celebrating happy returns with Tony Abbott. Who is this speaking on the PM's birthday?
The gravity of this situation is not lost on me.
Any thoughts on who that might have been? Somebody who had a far less happy Monday.
That was the former. Was it Keating?
Oh, no, it wasn't Keating. No. That was somebody who was in the media and under scrutiny not for having a birthday on Monday this week. Not somebody who you might... I certainly hadn't heard much from him before. Let's have a listen again.
The gravity of this situation is not lost on me.
Now, I'll give you a clue. He wasn't referring to Tony Abbott's birthday. He was referring to the state of affairs in the West Australian Senate count and recount. Any thoughts on who that might have been?
The head of the Australian Electoral Commission.
Tanvir Ahmed is correct. I'll accept Australian Electoral Commissioner because I'm not sure that it's really fair to ask anyone what his name is. Does anyone remember who it is or know who it is? No. It's Ed Killiston, apparently. And he was on RN.
Spell it, Julian.
Only because I'm reading it from a screen. I probably could, but... I don't want to show off because I'd probably get it wrong, Graham. But look, that was a tough day at the office, wasn't it? Having to front up and do media, admitting that you'd missed nearly 1,400 votes, and of course, he was legally obliged to declare the election result to open up the possibility of a legal challenge. So something tells me that he had far fewer happy returns than Tony Abbott on Monday, the 4th of November. It's question time on Friday Drive. Julian Morrow with you. And in the house tonight, we have Chris Berg, Graham Morris and Tanvir Ahmed. And it's 25 minutes past 7.
Order!
Round 3.
Order!
And this round relates to a bit of international affairs now, because there was a fascinating story this week about the suggestion that the former and now departed leader of the PLO, Yasser Arafat, may in fact not have died for the reasons that was thought at the time and may have been a victim of poisoning. Tanvir Ahmed, apparently it's actually not the first time that there's been somebody... a high-profile person poisoned by this particular substance. Do you know what it was that they think that Yasser Arafat might have been poisoned by?
Well, Julian, yeah, someone who did a medical degree but has forgotten much of what I did at university.
I'm pretty confident that this wasn't on your studies.
I quickly retreated to the periodic table. And cousin of plutonium, mm-hmm. It's polonium.
It is polonium, yeah.
P.O. is the symbols.
Oh, now you're showing off. But well, go for it. Yeah,
so not
absolutely.
Poe the celebrity chef.
No, that wouldn't poison anyone. Polonium. We should be very clear too.
But yeah, I thought it was an extraordinary story. Interestingly, driven by the media, in fact, by an Al Jazeera story.
Yes. Yeah.
You sure the symbol is not P.L.O.?
It should be. Perhaps they could change that.
It was suitably chosen.
Yeah.
Yeah. So I'm amazed that he wouldn't have had a definitive autopsy.
Yeah.
At the time, but I mean, it would have been shrouded in so much politics. So I think it's an extraordinary story. It hasn't yet been fully confirmed.
This is true. And, you know, polonium poisonings are hard to pin down. Of course, back in 2006, there was a Russian gentleman, Alexander Litvinenko, who went to, I think, tea at a restaurant in London and got a very severe case of polonium and ended up dying, I think, courtesy of the Russian
security forces. Is polonium now a disease, is it? Well, you call polonium again.
Yeah, that's right, yeah. Exactly. But it did get me...
Do you like a side of polonium?
Yeah, that's right. Yeah, it's only in the best of Russian defectors' houses is it served. But, it drew to mind an interview with a guy who's got a fascinating job. He's... Now, Tanvi, you're psychiatrist and journalist. This gentleman is a chemist and author. John Emsley is his name, and he wrote a book called The Elements of Murder, A History of Poison. Let's have a listen to his little rundown on polonium.
I mean, everybody who deals with polonium-210 knows how dangerous it is. In fact, I think it's generally regarded as one of the most toxic substances that we know. But it has one use, and that it gives off a lot of heat. And I know when the Russians sent their spaceship, which landed on the moon, that the electricity that it was generating for that was generated from a polonium thermoelectric cell, because 1 gram of polonium just left to itself will reach a temperature of about 700 degrees Fahrenheit. Mm. And you can use that heat, of course, to make electricity, and it was a very powerful source for that reason.
And therefore not surprising that it can be pretty toxic to humans. Tanvi, do you know what the 210 refers to? I just don't know that, but I'm just curious. Are there? I mean, it sounds like a range of colognes or something, doesn't it? Well, I'm not going to have polonium 210 tonight. I'll have 209.
It's isotopes.
Right, so okay.
There'd be different types of... Yeah, I'll try. I don't actually know what it means.
It has 210 of the isotopes.
Yeah, right. Okay. Well, Chris Berg, you're well into it. So your question now. And look, I've got to admit, I'm being very unfair this round, because this question has basically nothing to do with this week's news, but I thought it was interesting. Who discovered polonium? And sadly, probably, also discovered polonium poisoning.
I've never heard of polonium.
That's a little bit hard.
I just want to be very clear.
Well, I mean, probably better known as for her research on radioactivity.
So it was Marie Curie?
Marie Curie, yes. Yeah. And sadly, tragically, her daughter, they think, died because of exposure to polonium in the lab. There was a vial which exploded in the laboratory. So, you know, that's a very cheery note to continue the quiz on.
So have a great night.
That's everyone. Right. Yeah.
Talk about taking one for the team. Exactly.
Well, let's move on to more pleasant poisonings now. Graham Morris, this one's for you. Now, literal poison, I couldn't find any instances of it being used in Australian democracy, but it did come into play in another country's democratic elections back in 2004. A candidate for president in a particular European nation was poisoned. Do you remember this? And he ended up with a really disfigured face. Can you name the country that candidate, who went on to become the president of that country, actually, where poison, not polonium, I don't think, was part of the political diet, so to speak?
No.
And
I wouldn't have liked to have run that campaign.
No, yeah, exactly. Yeah.
You've never planned for that, really.
It's in the Eastern Bloc.
Yeah, is it the Ukraine?
It is the Ukraine. Chris Berg, well done. Yes. Mr. Yushchenko. I think it was Vladimir Yushchenko. I forget his first name. But yes, a very kind of suave younger candidate who came down with what they thought was a case of food poisoning and turned out to be a case of fairly significantly worse poisoning.
I have a tiny piece of trivia. I have a little coffee mug that says Tak Yushchenko, which I think means Go Yushchenko. I don't know why
orange?
I have it.
It was the orange revolution.
It's the orange one. Yeah, absolutely. It's my favourite coffee cup, and thank you for asking.
Well, I was going to ask the follow-up question of how or why you got it, but since you've admitted you don't know why.
It just arrived. You know, these things happen.
There you go.
It was a union gift.
was a union. They just drop stuff off these days.
Absolutely. It's question time on Friday Drive. Julia Morrow with you. Of course, if you are trying to remember the finer details of the history of polonium or political poisonings, you don't just have to remember it from now. You can podcast the Question Time quiz, and you can get it through the Radio National website or iTunes as well. And if you're listening to it right now, don't drink what you've got next to you, because it might have polonium in it.
Order. Round four. Order.
From science now to maths. Gee, it's just a barrel of laughs this week, isn't it? This is the numbers game on Question Time. Very simple. I'm going to refer to a few news stories from the week, all of which had numbers associated with them, and your job is to try and add or subtract the numbers together and work out the final answer. We might start with you, Chris Berg. Can you please take the number of unannounced or announced but unenacted tax changes that Joe Hockey said he'd identified on Monday this week? Take that number, then add to it the Australian unemployment rate, just the first digit of it, and then subtract from that the number of basis points that interest rates moved on Cup Day this week. Any thoughts? And look, can I say again, I understand this is incredibly impossible, so if anyone has any thoughts on it.
I know the last two, and the first one I think is 112, so I'm going to say 117.
Yeah, well, look, you're not far off. It was 96 announced but unenacted tax changes that Joe Hockey said he'd identified, and there was a much more detailed breakdown of that on Monday. Then the unemployment rate is...
5.
It's 5.7, yep. So you're adding that, and then the number of basis points that interest rates move.
Zero.
So 5.7. Were we rounding up or down?
Yeah, well, we just the first digit of it. Yeah, okay, well spotted though. Yeah, yeah. So
I got you're too smart for this quiz.
Yeah, that's right. So I got to 101, and we'd leave it there. But I was fascinated, Graham Morris, by the announced but unenacted tax changes, and the fact that some of those went all the way back to the Howard government. Does that happen much? Is that something that kind of inside the kind of Canberra Beltway people are aware of, things that have been announced but just no one ever got round to enacting them?
Well, it was kind of funny, wasn't it? It was saying, look, let's have a press conference on what we're not going to do.
Yes. Well, at least they're having a press conference, I suppose. This is, small mercies.
But you can actually see why. Some of these things cost money or create uncertainty, but it was quite an unusual thing to do, to announce what you're not going to do.
Absolutely. Okay, all right, let's move on to the next one. Well, Graham, we'll make this for you. Can you take the number of the winning horse in the Melbourne Cup? And then add to that the price of a Twitter share, as announced, and then subtract from that the number of religions that John Howard says is enough, according to his speech about climate change this week. Again, pretty hard, but any thoughts on what the number of the Melbourne Cup winner was this week?
I know, but the last one is one.
The last one is one. That is absolutely correct. Anyone interested
99?
In 99, no. Anyone know what a Twitter share is going to be?
Well, $26.
$26 is right. Yeah, okay. So we have to minus one from 26, but the first thing is the number
of the horse.
Of the horse. And since we all know that everyone backed a dud this week, I'll just give it to you. It's six. So we've got Fiorenti was six. So it's six
32,
plus 26. 31. Minus one. Gee, you're on fire with the math there, Tammy. Yeah. Very, very impressive.
Coming back.
Yep. Julie, in this particular game, you're just trying to add more questions into our quiz. Really.
Yeah, this is true.
You're trying to multiply by three.
Yes, that is correct.
Okay. I just want to register my dissent.
Well, that's all. And noted. So who are we? I've even forgotten who we're supposed to be with now. I think it might be you, Tammy. So you'll definitely get this. Can you take the number of government advisory groups that are going to be chopped after today's announcement? Add to that, and I know you know this one, the initial asking price in millions of Eddie Obeid's mansion at Hunter's Hill. Don't pretend you haven't looked. And then subtract from that the number of magazines that Tom Cruise is suing for defamation. Totally unfair on all fronts. Let's start with the first one. How many advisory groups for the CHOP? Does anyone know what that
is? Does CSIRO count as an advisory
group? Well, no. I think
it's not quite the CHOP.
They're all the different advisory groups.
Yeah.
Do you know how many are going to be going, Chris?
20-something.
Yes, 20 is right.
Wow. Okay.
Yeah. Graham, had you ever heard of the Australian Animal Welfare Advisory Committee?
Bugger, no.
or the insurance...
Because you'd actually been appointed to
it.
Yeah,
that's right. There was the Insurance National Intercountry Adoption Advisory Group, the High Speed Rail Advisory Group. What is the purpose of these advisory groups? Are they useful, Graham?
they do a report for a politician who is in trouble and doesn't have an answer. but sometimes it can be quite valuable. But it's just that a lot of that stuff is now redundant. So they were on a hiding to nothing, and they were always going to lose their jobs.
Graham, have you...
Having been on one.
Oh, you've been on one? Okay, yeah, right.
My impression was that it was a way to show that they've consulted.
Yes.
I think that's the key reason. So there'll be a bureaucrat who wants to do something, and he can say, hey, I've consulted.
One man that has been regularly consulted in the state of New South Wales is Eddie Obeid. Graham, are you interested in Eddie's Hunters Hill property at all?
Oh, that I was.
Well, it cost you a lazy $10 million asking price if you did. So we have to add, and I think it's appropriate to add a margin when Eddie's involved. So you add, 10 to 20, and then anyone been reading the trash mags? Know how many magazines Tom Cruise is suing? I won't say why he's suing because I fear that would add the ABC to the list.
This is because he. These magazines said that he abandoned. Abandoned his daughter,
and that is what we call in copyright law or defamation law a fair report. Tanvir, thank you very much.
And it's, I think, is it five?
No, it's less than that. Thankfully, it's two.
Okay.
Yeah, so we're looking to add. So take 20, add 10, and subtract 2.
So now 28.
28 is the correct answer, and we've got through the maths, but perhaps not the defamation. It's question time on Friday Drive. 23 minutes. To 8, and we have one more round to go.
Order.
Round 5.
Order.
And we're running a bit short of time, but this is the anthems round. What we're going to do is we're going to play an anthem, and if anyone can pick the anthem, it relates to a story in international affairs this week. See if you can pick the anthem. I'll just open this up to everyone. Let's play the first one. Pretty hard.
Is that Farsi?
You're in the right part of the world. If we could just tuck that down a bit, I'll give you a little bit of a clue.
Boy, bowling, what a great delivery. That's magnificent bowling.
Yeah, so it's a cricketing nation. No, it's not Afghanistan. It's a cricketing nation.
Pakistan.
Who was that? Who just says Pakistan? Yeah, Tanvir Ahmed, absolutely correct. It is Pakistan. That is the national anthem of Pakistan, composed in 1949, and it's also known as the Sacred Land. And before you got it, I had a little bit of an audio grab, amazing stuff, of the founder of Pakistan doing an address to the people of America, Jinnah, which was absolutely fascinating. Now, we'll try and just sneak one last one in. Can we hear this, the second national anthem, please? Let's hear it now. No, we may not have it. Okay, let's see. Well, I'll give you
the Antarctic.
Here it is. I'll give you a bit of a clue.
How some was slapped in the face and you stood by and watched.
I'll give it to you again.
How some was slapped in the face and you stood by and watched.
Well, here's another one.
So it's Greece?
It's Greece, absolutely correct. Well done, Chris Berg, yeah.
I just want to be that guy.
Not the most thorough traversing of Greek culture there, but yes, that is.
A little soundbite of the slap.
That's right, it was the slap, which of course is written by Greek Australian Christos Solkos. And unfortunately, that's all we've got time for, but thank you very much to all our guests, Chris Berg, Graham Morris and Tanvir Ahmed.
Thank you.
See you, mate.
And on Friday Drive, it is 20 minutes to 8.